Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
Chris Meredith joins us right now, Senior Portfolio Manager at OSAM, to talk about investing in active investing. So much a focus on passive investing that makes people who are aspiring stock pickers like me crazy. And yet, it's hard to get away from this great argument that Warren Buffett put it as plainly as anyone, active stock picker Warren Buffett, that indexing, because the fees are so low, can work out so great for investors.
I would say that indexing can work out great for investors if they're basically individual investors that aren't committed to a process and don't have the right perspective on what they need to do in order to be a successful investor. At O'Shaughnessy, we spend a lot of time thinking through how to build successful investment strategies. And we've spent a lot of our time realizing that a key aspect of this is educating people on how to build a successful investment strategy, not just using our strategies, but having the discipline themselves to go through and be a long-term investor.
Yeah, Jim O'Shaughnessy has spent some time, you know, with us kind of explaining your methodology. Talk to us a little bit about the kind of key metrics that you guys focus on.
Sure. I mean, the metrics are one thing on the data points that we look at. Really, Jim's been doing a lot of work recently with some posts at our website, osam.com, and some blog topics. Really, he's been talking a lot more about the mental perspective of people need to have to be a long-term investor. There's obviously a portion of us where we are not traders. We're not looking at short-term, you know, got a hunch, buy a bunch, and do one trade to try to make a double or a triple along the way. We build strategies for long-term, where we're looking for people with investment objectives over decades. And what you want to do is, once you have that perspective of being an investor, then it's about building a process. I also teach at Cornell and with students, and it's the very first thing I say on the first day of class of being a successful investor is you have to separate your process from the results. And the idea is that when you're teaching students and they have a program where they're running money, they have essentially 9 months with me where they're learning how to do this. And the idea is you build a successful process, but over a 9 month period.
But nothing's ever successful 100% of the time. So when do you determine that the process that you've got in place after what chunk of time that you say, well, wait a minute, this process has got to change a little bit?
We give a very long period of time because you can wind up being successful. The average successful investor is right on a quarterly basis, probably about 6 out of 10 times, which means 40% of the time you're looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, this quarter didn't work. It's a really challenging perspective to have where your quarter, you're behind.
Well, I mean, geez, I mean, when I was on the buy side, you try to talk about short selling to someone that didn't short stocks.
Yes.
And when even among us who did, I worked at a short only fund for a while and ran, you know, big chunk of money there. You talk to someone who didn't short stocks, they say, well, what's your timing on this? Well, I don't know what it's like. I've got a notion.
Right.
But it's going to be wrong. The stock's going to go up before it goes down. I don't know the last day the stock's going to be up. It's not worth what it's supposed to be today, so it should start going down any second now, but probably won't.
Which is the important part about building a process. At our firm, what we do is we build quantitative strategies and take emotion out of the process. The hard part is if you're going through and you're working through your brain and through all the emotions that we're hardwired to make reactions at the wrong times, you can wind up having difficulty. Hence why passive investing does work for some people that don't have that long-term perspective or discipline.
Because I know kind of our tease into this was how the mad rush by investors into passive products is an opportunity for active investors. But, you know, active investors can get thrown by their emotions.
Absolutely.
And make bad decisions at the wrong time. So why not continue the kind of stay with the passive mode where you kind of take, hopefully, emotions out of it?
Because you're giving up the opportunity for upside, right? You have the ability to
outperform. Yeah, but you're also maybe protecting yourself on the downside.
What you're doing is you're basically setting your bar and saying that I'm going to get market level returns, right? And you're saying if I'm going to try to build an allocation for myself, I'm going to sit there and have my equity fixed income, and that'll be the only lever you have to meet your investment goals. The part is if you can go through and build an active strategy within that allocation and you have successful tools, or you can hire somebody who has the successful tools, you can wind up adding to that overall performance. The Yale Endowment is a good example of that, where they generated 5% excess return. Half their excess return basically came from that manager selection component, and half of it came from the asset allocation. If they'd only gone with the allocation and gone passive with the rest, they would have given up half their upside.
I'm playing with you a little bit, but you know, you bring up the endowments. A lot of university endowments have had a tough time actively making investment choices.
Recently, it's been a tough, challenging environment for active
investing overall. Yeah.
Yes. But that's, if you look at the long-term data, there have been long periods of times where active management has struggled. You look at the 98-99 time frame, looking at this now, where it's a long period of time, but it is not one that's out of the norm for the longer cycle of when active management has worked and has not worked.
It's interesting, too, that I think it's really sort of about the quality of the managers. I mean, I'm not saying because Yale put some money in my firm, the firm that I worked at as well, but it really is about the quality of the managers. And the average return from a hedge fund, the average return to an investor isn't good because they're average. But the better ones, and everyone thinks they're doing that when they're picking a stock. They think they're picking a better stock. They think they're picking a better a mutual fund. They think they're picking a better hedge fund. They think they're picking a better sector for their ETF or their index, but they're not.
The parts for us is that the important thing for us is if you have a process, right, where you're going to the bottom and you're saying, how are you building these and having a repeatable methodology for identifying investments, we think you have a better idea of how you're going to build a portfolio than if you're sitting there and trying to identify trends every time through. If you're trying to keep on top of the market and say, you know, I think right now it's going to be this type of style that will work, or at this time this style will work, that is less successful than having one style overall and keeping
time. You guys are buy and hold.
Yes.
For a while. I'm just curious, in the recent environment, any changes, though, that you have potentially made to some of your positions?
We're always looking to improve on our strategies, and our positions will rotate through based on characteristics, but the philosophies are the same ones that Jim started with back in 1996 when he wrote What Works on Wall Street, and it's identifying stocks based on characteristics like valuation, momentum, and yield. And those are still the same bedrock principles we use today.
Hard to, though, ignore kind of some the momentum, though, that we see in just kind of the broader market. Again, going back to the index.
Yes. it's one where the index has proven active management wrong for now 5 out of the last 6 years, right? So it's been a challenging environment. But again, not one that makes us sit there and say we should give up on the idea of active management in total.
So how's your last year been?
Been good.
Yeah.
Well, we're actually
defined good.
Our large value strategy is outperforming 6.5%, almost 7% year to date. We've had a strong rally in the last 12 months, and we've been doing fine.
So let's get to that process a little bit. Describe key component of some of the tough decisions you've made in that process.
Yeah. So our large value strategy is one that identifies companies based on the return of capital, and it's the idea that the shareholder yield, where
return
you're
on invested capital,
return of capital through dividends and share repurchases.
Okay.
Right. So
share repurchases, really. I have a hard time seeing that adding value. I have a hard time getting my head around that idea.
The idea is that these are companies that are making strong capital reinvestment within their own companies, but they have excess capital out there and they're giving it back to shareholders. It's actually.
But is it really giving it back to shareholders?
It is, through the repurchase of shares. It's in methodology where they're recouping the shares that are out of the market and consolidates it and goes through. But the example I'll give is Boeing, right? Boeing has gone through, and in the last 3 years, it's generated $32 billion in operating cash flow. It's taken $20 billion of that and done it on share repurchases. Now, that's a portion where what happens is it embeds a secondary growth rate inside of the stock. So where it's been even though the sales have been flat, they've improved a little bit on their operating margin, but they've gone through and had their EPS grow from 6.7 up to 11.4, essentially. So $11.38.
But that's also a company that sees sales had been up, down 2% last year.
Yeah.
But I look at other companies like IBM that have borrowed money to fuel, to pay for a lot of share reacquisition.
Buybacks, yeah.
Earnings per share is going up. The business is shrinking massively. I know that the stock's done well in the last year. It's done terribly over the last previous few years.
There's some portions of these that are going to be contrarian. But the important part for our strategy, again, is we're identifying the characteristics we're using to build portfolios. We also believe that you build investment strategies on probabilities, right? The idea is that we are sitting there and saying that on average, these stocks are going to outperform more than not. And it's one that's built a successful track record over time.
So would your strategy then also buy some IBM, even though the company's doing poorly? Or is there something else that screens out a company like IBM, where it's got shrinking revenues, shrinking operating profits, but also a shrinking share count?
Our overall process takes in other characteristics as well to try to go through and identify.
So what's
companies.
The one that corrects for the mistake I'm pointing out?
Or earnings growth is one that we look at to see precipitous declines in earnings, poor return on invested capital.
So net income, not just earnings per share.
Correct. And that's when we're looking at also, we have financial strength to look at the leverage on the balance sheet, the direction that it's headed in, the quality of the earnings to check the representation of how a company is presenting itself and whether it's conservative or aggressive.
Quality of earnings meaning what? Tell me what a bad earnings quality looks like compared to a good earnings quality.
If its net income is higher than its cash flow and you're winding up seeing it that's one that would be a poor quality of earnings because it's basically boosting its earnings through accounting choices.
And we see that a lot.
You can see that. It's about 15% of the companies out there.
We'll leave it there. Fun conversation. Thank you so much. Say hi to Jim.
Will do.
Chris Meredith, Head of Research and Senior Portfolio Manager at O'Shaughnessy Asset Management, roughly $6 billion in assets under management, based in Stamford, Connecticut, in our Bloomberg 1130 studio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.